Navy veteran Justin Piché transitioned from roles at Amazon and ExxonMobil to land investment. Within 6 months, he was able to replace his corporate income, quickly building relationships and establishing a notable presence in the industry. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
Navy Federal offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high-interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. All right, we're talking with Navy veteran Justin Piché from Scout Land Group. Justin, looking forward to chatting with you about everything you're doing in the land business. A little bit involved in the land business myself last year or so. So before we get to talking about all that, take us back and tell us what you did in the Navy.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Hey, yeah, so I was a Navy nuclear submarine officer. And so like a lot of folks who got through that program, I actually went to LSU Chemical Engineering. Went to the NUPOC program in college, which was a pretty sweet gig in terms of starting out getting E6 pay for a period of time while you're in school, committing, and then getting out officer candidate school in Rhode Island, some training, and then getting stationed up in Washington. That's where I was stationed on an SSBN submarine as a junior officer and doing a few deployments, a shipyard period, and then separating from the submarine, from the shipyard into civilian life.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always said the smartest folks in the military or Navy nuclear submarine officers. Every one of you I've ever met is like a whiz kid. So anyways, and then I've also heard like from SWOs at least, I don't know if it's the same on the sub side, but the year or two they spent in dry dock, they worked like way more than they did even when they were going out on deployments and stuff. So I don't know if that was your same experience or not.
Yeah, it was interesting being in dry dock. There was challenging in a different way because you're at, you know, you stand a lot of duty, especially when you're taking the ship apart. We did an engineered refueling overhaul, which is where you change out the core of the nuclear reactor, put in a new core. And we were also doing the submarine was undergoing a huge refit, tactical systems, new fire control systems, the whole gambit. I mean, I think it was a $750 million refit, essentially. So much cost. I don't know. My understanding is it was on budget. I left before they finished, but it was like one of the very few refits that was actually on budget, on time. Boat got back out to sea trials on schedule. So that was pretty, pretty exciting. But yeah, one of the things I did leaving the Navy is I participated in the DoD Skills Bridge program.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like while you're still in the military and getting paid by the U.S. government, you can basically work in the private sector, kind of like an internship, an unpaid internship, except for you're still employed by the military to build up skills before transitioning out. And so the latter part of my shipyard experience, I did that. So I worked at Amazon for 3 months or so, going from where I lived in Poulsbo, Washington, over to Seattle to their corporate office Monday through Thursday. And then on Friday, I would report back to the boat and I'd basically stand duty from Friday to Sunday. And then I'd get off Sunday morning at some point and then go back, work Amazon so I stood pretty long periods of duty, basically, not getting relief for a while.
You know, the Skills Bridge program is a great program. I've interviewed some other folks on the show that went through that also. Where do you go? Do you know where you go or who manages that program to check into it? If you were interested in getting in the Skills Bridge program?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's been a minute.
You could probably Google it. But.
It was pretty rare for submarine officers to do it. There was another officer who was separating from the boat maybe 3 months before me. He was an academy grad. So he commissioned in May or June or whenever you graduate from the academy. And then I commissioned in September after OCS. So he was due to move out just before me. And he actually did it. And he was the one who told me about it. It's just really it's not a very common thing in the submarine force and the Navy that I'm aware of. It's very common. It was very common at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. And so he connected me with some whoever the folks were in charge of it at Joint Base Lewis-McChord. I got all the paperwork. And then, I presented to my captain. he was willing to sign and get me out doing that. But yeah, I know the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, there's a program called Hiring Our Heroes.
Yeah,
that basically works. I know that works hand in hand with the Skills Bridge program. So that's actually what I did. Hiring Our Heroes worked with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they put on, they basically organized a career fair, or not a career fair, like an interview kind of meeting thing where a lot of folks who were interested in this basically went, spoke to these companies, essentially interviewed there, and then got offers for certain internships. And then you've got to basically accept which one you wanted to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you get out of the Navy, you end up not going to work for Amazon. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I was geographically constrained. I'm from Houston, Texas, and my family needed to move back for various family reasons. My wife also worked at Chevron at the time. She still does, which is downtown Houston. And so I was like, hey, if we're going to get out, like, let's go where we already have, you know, one of us has stable employment. Our families are there. And so at the time, Amazon did not have a position kind of as like a, I don't remember what they called it. Ops managers, typically the role that a lot of military officers or, you know, senior enlisted will come out into after military service. They didn't have a position available in Houston. And so I came to Houston and then just started applying the jobs here.
All right, cool. And so on down the road, you're working, how long do you end up working at Exxon?
5 years. So yeah. So one thing, maybe this is a, cause this is obviously we're speaking to military folks, maybe who are thinking about getting out and doing something different. One of the things that was not super clear to me when I got out, was kind of the whole application process and like how it really works when you're applying to some big companies, especially. I probably applied to, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of jobs, filling out the online application and submitting my resume. None of that got me anything. The only thing that got me interviews was knowing somebody at the company or connecting with somebody who knew somebody and getting like referrals. And it just so happened with Exxon, a coworker of my wife had a college like buddy who was pretty senior in Exxon, who in conversations they had mentioned they're looking for logistics and supply chain professionals in the chemical company. And I had just worked at this Amazon supply chain thing and I was getting out of the military. And so he's like, yeah, I'll take your husband's resume and give it to my friend. And then that's how I got the interview. And then that's how I got the job. It was not because I applied to some job board.
Yeah. I don't even know how those job boards stay in business, because I've hardly ever heard of anybody getting a job, just putting something into the job board and, you know, unless it's like a really simple job or whatever, but it's all about networking. It always has been, and it probably always will be. So I wonder how some of those job board places.
I mean, it works. I think it works for small businesses. Like I've hired several people through Indeed, and you know, you can kind of, if it's one person doing it on a mission, you know, you can get through people. But if I, like, for example, I had one job where I had 100 applicants and it took me like a month just to get through the applicants. You know, I gave them some requirements, film a video of some, like, through some questions, cause I didn't have time just to interview all these people. Obviously that weeded out a bunch of people, cause a lot of people just won't take that next step to actually do something. And so then I got down to a list of about 50, and then I watched all their videos and I like wrote comments about all of them, and I narrowed it down to 10, and then I scheduled interviews with 10, and then I narrowed it down to like two or three, and then scheduled further interviews and then hired somebody. But, you know, think about that on a scale of a major corporation, which thousands of people want to apply for this job. I mean,
yeah,
it's impossible to be seen above.
Yeah. It's crazy. So eventually you walked away from corporate America. You know, where'd this whole entrepreneurship thing come from?
Yeah, honestly, it really started around COVID time. My wife and I had a 6-month-old daughter, 7-month-old daughter, kind of right when COVID was hitting. And we basically were working from home for months. And we had never worked from home. We didn't know anything different than waking up early, getting our cute daughter off to daycare. Or you know, I think for a little period of time, we had a nanny come. And just not really see her until the evening when we get off work, you know, spend an hour, put her down for bed, and then that's it. Gotta, you know, hang out with each other and go to bed and repeat, you know, every day of the week. But when COVID hit, we were, you know, it was incredible. Just, I had an hour and a half back every day of commuting that I no longer had to do. And all that time was spent with my family. And so, you know, over time, obviously, we went back into the office more up until about 2021. And so all this time, I knew I wanted to do something else. And so I was listening to all kinds of real estate podcasts. I started buying single family homes, doing the BRRRR method, buy, renovate, rent, refinance, repeat, whatever it is. Bought short-term rental, large 10-bedroom house in North Carolina to operate. And those were great, but they weren't like huge amounts of income to replace my income. Right. And I was still working, you know, full-time for ExxonMobil. And so my wife got pregnant with our son, Jacob. And kind of right as he was due, I was both getting a new job that was going to require me to basically leave the house around 6:30 to get to work and not be able to really come home until probably about 5. So I was going to go right back into that before COVID reality where I was commuting a lot more and not able to see my kids as much. And then he was also getting a step up, a kind of a unique role at Chevron that was going to require more travel. And so we were faced with a position of having to hire somebody, being in a position where we would need to hire somebody to come basically wake our kids up, feed them, get them to school, pick them up. And that was really the untenable situation for us in the way that we wanted to live our life.
Yeah.
And so around that time, as I was searching for homes to buy off market, a buddy of mine started investing in land. And he came to me with a deal and he said, "Hey, I have this 20-acre tract in Colorado. You know, I buy it for 16. I think we can sell it for 50. I'm like, "What? You could buy something for 16,000 and do nothing to it and sell it for 50.
No renovation. Like, yeah. No,
no, no renovation. Yeah.
Regulations on homes and lead paint waivers. And
yeah, exactly. And at first I was like super skeptical. I was like, "Hey, I don't, you know, I'm not sure that's right." And he's like, "No, I'm telling you, man, here, look at this." He showed me some comps and like, you know, I'd been looking at comps for real estate and I'm like, "Oh wow. Yeah. 20 acres really is selling for 50 in this area." And, anyway, I funded the deal and he split the profits with me. And within a few months, I doubled my money. And I was like, "Holy smokes, this is incredible." I asked him to teach me everything he knew. And at the time, there's a program called Learn Land. A guy named Clint Turner had put it on. And so he was working with Clint. So I basically paid for coaching at that time and went all in on the land business. It's kind of a tumultuous 6 months because I was working full time for Exxon. Yeah. I had a 2-year-old and a newborn. And I spun up a land business and went all in at the same time. So those between September when my son was born and March of 2022 was just insanity, honestly, like working myself to the bone. I don't wish upon anyone, but it did help get launched a little faster than maybe I otherwise would have.
Wow. Members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. By opening a certificate, you could earn more than a standard savings account. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. Add money at any time and watch your savings grow. Navy Federal offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses. Fixed rate equity loans offer no closing costs, saving you money. To learn more about Navy Federal's home equity loans, visit NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loan subject to approval. With a busy schedule, it's always important to prioritize your to-do list, but the little things can keep you from conquering your tasks. That's where Squared Away comes in. The remote executive assistants tackle the tasks you don't have time for so you can focus on what really matters. And what I really love about this company is their dedication to supporting military families. I have 2 male spouses that helped me produce this podcast. Squared Away was founded by a military spouse who realized she was part of an amazing talent pool, and when changing bases made it hard to hold down a job, their skills were underutilized. At Squared Away, highly educated military spouses become your trusted remote executive assistants. They operate in all U.S. time zones for a fraction of the cost of a full-time employee. Squared Away has already supported so many business owners with just about every kind of task or project, from event planning, grant writing, bookkeeping, proofreading, or updating the company website and social media, to personal tasks like booking a plane flight for a dog, researching puppeteers, or planning a virtual baby shower. We all know how capable our male spouses are and how difficult it is for them to maintain quality employment through the military operational tempo. So contact Squared Away today to see how they can support your business. Just go to gosquaredaway.com/contact. That's gosquaredaway.com/contact. All right, back talking with Navy veteran Justin Pichet from Scout Land Group. So, Justin, you discovered vacant land flipping and investing, and you went all in with everything, but you're still maintaining the day job. Talk about the day that you, like, talk about leading up to the day that you actually told Exxon you were walking away. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Especially with a couple young kids, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, it was basically, let's talk about coaching. So one of the things that I was doing beforehand was wholesaling houses or looking for off market deals in houses. And I did a couple of house deals, 10 grand here, 15 grand there, you know, which sounds like a lot if it was its own thing, but that took a lot of money and time marketing to get those deals. So the profit obviously was not high in those. I did make a little bit of money, but not a lot of money doing that. And it was a lot of work, but I learned a lot, right? I learned how to negotiate. I learned how to talk to people. I learned different marketing techniques. And so going into the coaching, I already knew, hey, there's a ton I don't know. People have already done this. I could spend the next 6 months to a year learning trial by error, figuring out how to do this on my own, or I could just pay upfront and get access to somebody else's knowledge who is already successful in this business and really just skip that whole learning process. So that was my mindset going into coaching was, man, somebody else has learned these lessons. Why don't I pay them to teach them to me upfront so that I can avoid these huge pitfalls and get launched quicker? Because my goal at that point was as quickly as possible, replace my income, line up enough deals, enough profit to say, oh, wow, I've made more in these 6 months than I will in my entire annual W-2. So then I can feel confident to say, okay, I'm going to leave because my time is better. So if I spend these 8 hours I'm working for ExxonMobil on my business, well, that is a much higher return on my time than continuing to work for Exxon and not having control over my salary, not having control over my pay increases or my time or my vacation to some extent.
Yeah. So what was your experience with the coaching?
Yeah, I mean, really, really positive. You know, I spent a lot of time obviously digesting the material, setting up my business. You know, I am a action taker. Like if I want to do something, like I'm going to just do it. I'm not, maybe the right way to say this is I will build a plane as I'm taking off. I don't wait to have the plane totally built and it's completely safe and ready to go. Like that's not my style. My style is to just go fast, do things, and you will learn as you go. And you know, I mean, there has to be some risk, you know, risk balance there where you're not just like, you got to be smart about it, but that's kind of how I approach things. And so that's what, the coaching was,
it's awesome.
I basically just took all the advice in the coaching, learned a lot of lessons on the way, brought questions, and just started getting consistent with marketing, outreach, negotiations until a point where I was, you know, I didn't have enough time anymore. And then I hired, and then I pushed that team until we didn't have enough time anymore. And then I hired again. That's just kind of the process, but the coaching was great. It gave me the confidence to do deals that I otherwise wouldn't have the confidence to do. It gave me somebody and a team of people looking over my shoulder, so to speak, helping to advise on some of the common pitfalls that I might have fallen into had I not had that coaching. So yeah. That was my kind of,
I mean, do you remember early on in the beginning where a coach probably saved you so much money or so much pain and heartache? And like, cause a lot of people don't want to pay them, especially veterans, like military folks are used to getting everything for free. I mean, that I'm not going to pay somebody to teach me something. I get that stuff for free all the time, you know? So it's kind of an odd concept for military folks to have that attitude, but you pay somebody a few thousand bucks or whatever, and it like saves you tens of thousands of dollars in time
for
too.
Sure.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, I mean, I started targeting North Carolina as a state to just go after land deals. Not really a ton of rhyme or reason to it other than I owned a house there and I figured, hey, I can at least when I'm talking to people say, I have a house in this city and be more relatable. That was really my only thought behind it. And it was a net influx state. You know, there's some states where people are moving to. North Carolina is one of them. You know, Texas, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, it's kind of southeast. A lot of people are moving to those states. So I figured, hey, that's a good spot to market to. There's a lot of very sloped land in Western North Carolina. There's a lot of like defunct neighborhoods that were split up in like 2000, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then never built on ever. Just platted. People bought them and then have owned them for almost 20 years now, and they're worth a fraction of what they paid for them because the developer went out of business. And so the things like that, where when you're first starting, all you want to do is do a deal. You're like, I got to do a deal. I got to do a deal. You're spending all this money looking for land to buy. You got to do a deal, and you feel this pressure. But if you do the deals that are bad, if you decide, hey, I'm going to do this deal because I need to do a deal, you could really lose your lunch. You could pay too much. You could own a property that nobody will ever buy. And you're just sitting there like, wow, I just spent $20,000 on this piece of land that I'm never going to sell. Like, how am I going to get rid of this?
Yeah. And
so, yeah, the coaching, having people tell you, hey, man, that's like not even buildable. Like, don't even look at that. Do you see this neighborhood? There's not a single house in it. Why would you buy that land if nobody has built or bought and there's no sales in it? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Are you going to hang on to it forever? Like, what are you going to do with it?
Right.
Those type of things.
Yeah. What were some of the initial business aspects? Like, you had never really built a business from scratch, and that's essentially what you're doing. Because, and how quickly did you, the solopreneur thing, I'm going to do everything myself because I don't have the money. I don't want to spend the money on having it. Did you bring in team members right away and start shed loading and delegating to other people?
Yeah. So I decided, hey, I had money from working and savings and stuff. So I basically set aside 50 grand of basically OPEX. And I said, hey, this is the money I'm going to spend over the next like 6 months to market and to do what I need to do to operate the business, period. If I lose it, I lose it. If I don't make it back, I don't make it back. I made that decision right up front. Now, you don't need 50 grand to start, but because I had that 50 grand, you know, I was able to scale up marketing maybe a little faster than a lot of people who start this business start sending 5 to 10,000 mailers out a month. And so pretty quickly I got deal flow, right? Within a couple months, I was negotiating and buying or getting properties under contract, buying deals. And so when I got to the point where I had maybe like 4 in inventory, I'd bought 4 deals already, and I was working to sell them, and I was trying to scale the marketing, and I was trying to negotiate, and I was trying to field all the calls from the mailers that were coming in, and I was still working full time. This was kind of February 2022. That's the point where I was like, man, I'm just missing all these calls. I'm missing these opportunities. I need people who can work while I'm not working. And so the first thing was I hired somebody on sales to basically post properties on Facebook and just look for dispositions, like try to get rid of our properties so we can actually bring money back in. Because I felt like that was not the highest use of my time. It was pretty easy to train somebody to do it. You know, you can always just go with a realtor as well. A lot of times just list with a realtor, which a lot of people do. That way they don't have to even really have to have a sales kind of organization. But that was the first thing I did, just get rid of that. Now I'm not really thinking about it, the check and make sure it's being done. But I'm not dealing with all the tire kickers and, you know, buyers that are potentially coming in. And then I hired somebody to do transactional stuff, all the contracts, all the coordination with title companies, take care of all that aspect. Cause I just didn't enjoy it. I wasn't, you know, the minutiae, the details. I'm trying to build this plane in the air. I don't have time to tighten every screw. Like, I need somebody else to do that. Those were the first two people I hired. And then very quickly after that, I hired somebody on acquisitions, which is the probably the most important, honestly, role, because that's the engine that drives things forward. If you're not able to follow up with people quickly, you're going to lose deals. And so because I was working full time and had a family, and I wasn't able to really work until 8 p.m. after the kids went to bed on the business, I needed somebody who was on the phone with people every day working towards getting things under contract.
Yeah.
So yeah, I recognized really quickly, I cannot do it all myself. It was a tough mindset shift, honestly, to realize you don't have enough time. There's a book I read, not then, I read it, it didn't come out for a year or two, but it's a book I read called Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. And it's made a lot, you know, it's been all around kind of the circuit recently for entrepreneurs, but it really is it's a great book, and it really captures kind of the mindset shift that I had, which is your time is worth X. If you can hire somebody to do it for Y that's significantly less than X, well, then that gives you more time to focus on bigger, better things and ensures the base still gets done. And so every time you should be hiring to take more of your time back so that you can keep focusing on higher order tasks that both profit you more and that you enjoy. That was kind of the mindset shift that I needed to hire.
And I think a lot of people don't realize, especially maybe if you're in a, a technical kind of thing where you feel like you're the technical expert, you're the one that can figure this stuff out, or you're still trying to figure it out as you go along. It's hard to hire somebody to put them in place to figure something out for you. You got to figure it out first and then put somebody in place. But I was just saying, coming from a military background, you know, like we say in the Marine Corps, if you're a leader and you take a round in the grape and your unit falls apart around you, then you haven't been a very good leader. Your leader, as a leader, you should be training your people and empowering them so that your unit runs excellent without you. That's the ultimate goal. And you learn that in the military. And business is the same thing in business. The business should run fine without you. And if it's not, if the business is relying on you, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. And it's a struggle. I mean, I'll be the first to admit self-reflection, like I'm not quite there, right? If I were to, sure, I might be able to leave for a week, you know, maybe two, and we'll be okay. We'll be fine. We'll still get properties under contract. We'll still get properties sold. But there are still things in the business that require me to move forward. And that's really my goal as, as the owner, whatever, is to replace myself in all of those critical functions. And I've gotten a lot of the way there, but yeah, I totally resonate with the mindset of, if you're not an expert, how do you hire and train somebody to take over? But I think what you have to realize is other people can learn too. Like, you don't have to know everything yourself to teach it. There are resources, which is one of the reasons why coaching and education for me was so pivotal, is that I had access to this course catalog, essentially, of videos explaining how to do all these little details and things, how to operate the software, what the best practices were that this, you know, that Clint, this person decided, or it worked in his business. And now they get outdated, right? Things change, the markets change, you've got to adapt, but they're a great foundation. That education was a great foundation. So my team still, honestly, to this day, as I hire new people, I just hired 3 people 2 weeks ago to come in on the acquisitions team. They are looking at those videos to understand the basics of land investing and how to value deals, how to comp things, how to understand what's worth more and what's worth less so that they can be more effective at their jobs. I'm not training them those details. They're looking at the same videos I learned. And then there's, on top of that, more training where we kind of update them maybe a little bit in our best practices, the things we've learned. But yeah, that really helped me hire without being the expert myself, was having that kind of base of knowledge.
Like, what kind of numbers can you share with us? Like total number of deals you've done, or like, are you a real big numbers guy? You know, you got all the spreadsheets there in front of you.
I don't have them in front of me, but I was talking to my sales manager a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, I mean, so going into my first, so from, I'll just give you kind of a step-by-step kind of, from going in from 2021 when I started the business into 2022, I basically had one property in inventory over that new year into 2022.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I acquired a few, I think I sold maybe 13 or something my first year. And then in 2023, I had like 8 properties going into the next year. I probably sold 40 something. I don't remember exactly the number that I sold. And then going in this year, between December 31st and January 2024, I had 86 properties in inventory.
Wow.
And, you know, I mean, we have like 30 of them under contract in the last couple of weeks to sell. It's just kind of just continue to scale and grow it.
Yeah, that's incredible. And so are you doing some of your own coaching now?
So yeah, I do one-on-one coaching with a couple of clients. They're all established land investors, or one of them is does house, mobile home type, I want to say like finance arbitrage, if you will, like does a lot of creative finance on the buy and sell side, but he's looking to do the same thing with land. And so his is more of a set up the business to generate good leads so that he can transition that business model into the land space. Really interesting what he's working on. So that's more of a systems marketing setup, team setup type thing. The other coaching clients are more of, hey, how do I get more consistent deal flow? What are the next steps I need to take? And, you know, it's the high mindset of just, hey, let's pay somebody a little bit ahead of me that understands, that's been through these challenges, that can be hard, say hard truths and give me actionable advice. And then I recently actually, the education program that I came up through, Learn Land, I'm about to start kind of coaching for them. They have a lot of, you know, have built a really great community. A lot of folks are coming in and paying for their education. And so I'm going to kind of take my expertise and help coach people through that program as well.
Awesome. Well, how does somebody find out more about that coaching program if they're interested in getting more information?
Yeah. So I set up a little website, justinpichet.com. I'm like not a big self-promotion person. Like it's hard for me. Like I know it's weird, you know, you gotta have to be in this market to be known and have, you know, have a presence, but it's hard for me. I like to be behind the scenes in a lot of cases. So I'm kind of going out there, but I set up a website. It has some things on it about coaching. There's a Calendly booking link that I probably need to restrict more because a lot of people book calls with me on it, but that people set up 30 minutes. So if somebody is an experienced land investor that wants to kind of level up, you know, build a bigger team, more consistent deal flow, understand other types of marketing, subdivide, develop properties, that's something I can kind of help them do. And so that'd be a great person to set up a call with me. For the Learn Land coaching, they cater to a whole different audience, like people who have know nothing about land. Kind of some, there's a lot of different programs out there that do this. I find Learn Land is one of the better communities. And they have a program that basically takes folks from knowing nothing, you know, up through, doing seven figures.
Yeah. You know, self-promotion, that's kind of a thing in the veteran community. A lot of veterans are not comfortable with self-promotion. You've kind of had that beaten into you that you don't want to be sticking your head up above the crowd. It's all about the military unit. It's definitely a lot of us are that way naturally, of course, but in the military, it's kind of driven into you. Self-promotion in the military is not looked upon favorably. So sometimes when guys get out of the military, they have a hard time self-promoting, you could call it that, but you know, trying to sell themselves in an interview or trying to sell themselves in a business or whatever. The self-promotion thing is something that a lot of veterans struggle with. I've noticed this a few times in like nonprofits. I know some non-military folks that run military nonprofits. They're not scared to ask people for money. They're not scared to guilt people and say, we owe these guys something. You know, a typical military veteran wouldn't be doing that. Like, and so it's kind of good to have non-military people involved in those kind of things because they don't have that stigma about self-promotion or whatever. So it's definitely a thing that comes up quite a bit. So you're not alone.
Yeah, I know. I need to, you know, I see people post Instagram, Facebook ads about their thing or their coaching or their whatever. And sometimes I just kind of like I cringe. My God, you know?
You gotta be yourself though. Kind of like, I mean, you can't do something that makes you feel uncomfortable.
It's kind of an imposter syndrome thing. Like if I take a step outside of my business and look at it objectively, it's been very successful and I've learned a lot of lessons and I have a lot to teach and give. But when I'm in it, I'm like, oh man, I could know so much more. There's all these things I don't know, you know, but yeah, I mean, it's the old, whatever the adage is of like helping the next guy, the person below you, all they see is you up there, but you are looking up and you see all these people above you. Anyway.
Well, you know what an expert is? Somebody that just knows a little bit more than you, who's a little bit farther down the road. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
All right. Well, I'll give you the last word, Justin. I usually like to ask folks, you've definitely crossed over into the world of entrepreneurship. You're making money. You're paying your bills. You're successful. You're there. You've arrived. So what's that feel like? And if somebody's getting out of the military or maybe they got out like you and been there for a few years and they didn't really like where they landed, looking to start their own business, run their own show. What kind of advice comes to mind?
Yeah. Well, the feeling is, it's really nice to be in control of your destiny, of your time, really. Yeah. I think that was a lot of times entrepreneurs are ambitious people. I mean, just by nature of going out and pursuing something, you've got to have at least a little bit of ambition and drive. And a lot of folks in the military have ambition and drive. So when you get out, it's like, okay, that's why a lot of veterans make great entrepreneurs, I think, at least one of the reasons. There's probably many reasons. I think that if you are ambitious and have a lot of drive, it's hard in working for a big company to really stand out. I mean, there's procedures and practices in these big companies that have to be standardized to be fair to everybody and be predictable for the company. And so, one of the things that motivated me was being like rewarded for good work. And you could be the best employee and you're only going to get this much of a raise. And there's only so much you can do. Whereas if you're in control of your own destiny, there's no limit really. Yeah. I mean, depending on the industry, I mean, there's obviously market caps of industries, et cetera, but there's not really a limit in the traditional sense that there is with a W-2 job. So that's one thing, kind of the feeling is, hey, I'm in control and I like being in control. I like that feeling. And maybe advice for folks is, I thought about this when I was getting out. I wish I had known this when I got out, because my wife had a great stable job. We had no children. We had no home. We had almost no expenses. And in that situation, that would have been the perfect opportunity for me personally to take a risk and start a business and, yeah, and do something. I didn't need, we didn't need the income. We could rely on hers. I could have taken any risk, but I didn't have that mindset back then. I just thought, hey, the next thing you do is work for a big company. That's just what I, nobody in my family is really an entrepreneur. Well, there are a couple, but not my immediate family. And it just wasn't something I knew. But, you know, maybe for folks that are getting out, hey, if you have, especially if you have a significant other that has a stable job, I mean, and you want to start something, that is the time. That is the time before, you know, before you get entrenched in a company and get those golden handcuffs and feel you can't get out. Have that drive. Anyway, that's maybe a little bit of advice.
Awesome. Great advice. All right, Justin, thanks for sharing your entrepreneurial success story. We look forward to seeing your future success, and maybe we'll check back in with you in a year or so and see how you're doing.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Thank you, Joe. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right, you bet. All right, these two veterans are Oscar Mike. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review in iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.